Okay, we'll start the meeting then. This is the regularly scheduled monthly meeting of the Derby Planning and Zoning Commission. Today is Tuesday, November 16th. It is 7:03 p.m. All rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes, Ted Estuan.
Here.
Steve Jalowick.
Here.
Dave Kupchansky.
Here.
Raul Sanchez.
Here.
Alvar Miskiewicz.
Here.
Raymond Sadlick.
Here.
Gino D. Giovanni. Michael Fratarola.
Here.
Dan Blisman.
Here.
Okay, we'll move on to item number four, additions, deletions, and corrections to the agenda. Ryan, did you want to add a discussion to the agenda this evening? I wasn't sure if we were prepared to do that.
I guess I'll defer to Barbara if she's prepared to discuss Public Act 21-29 and how it relates to the commission or what their responsibilities may be. I know there were some documents submitted a few weeks ago about that public act to the commission. So a lot of it's legal in nature. So
I would prefer to put that off until next month because I'm not prepared to talk about that tonight.
Okay, you got it. So let the record state that additions, deletions, and corrections to the agenda. I do not have any for this evening. Ryan?
I do have one, Mr. Chairman. I think it'll come up in a second on receipt of applications. The Trolley Point application is listed as a zone change and then a special exception application. I believe that should be modified to be a zone change and a master site plan. Although we do not have a detailed statement of use from the applicant, so we do have to confirm whether or not the site plan is a master site plan and final site plan or just a master plan, but it is not a special exception application.
Okay. Can the commission ask, is there somebody here from the applicant this evening?
I don't know that we need that clarified. Yeah.
Well, you asked for clarification, so I was asking the applicant to clarify.
I think we can have it adjusted to say master site plan application, and then they can confirm prior to the next meeting whether or not their intention is it for it to be a master site plan and a final site plan. But either way, it's not a special exception application in the classic sense.
Okay, got it. That'll be for 8B. Right, okay. Communications, let the record state I do not have any this evening. Public portion, number six, is there anybody from the public who wishes to address the commission at this time?
Yes, Tom Linetti, 79 Sunset Drive, Derby. Ted, I see in their old business you talk, it says cannabis legalization or something. I don't understand what that's about. I mean, are you going to discuss that later? Could I speak on it later? Because I'm in favor.
Yeah, we talked about it last month. The commission wanted to decide to go forward and what zones they wanted to see this legal or not legal in, and we gave direction to the our city engineer and corp council as to craft something that we can kind of sink our teeth into where we would like to see this, and that's what we're going to continue to talk about during that old discussion, and that's why I kept it on the agenda for that evening. It will require a public hearing. It will require text change or map change. So at that point in time, we would ask you to reserve your right to speak during that time, so it becomes a matter of public record.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Tom. Would anybody else from the public like to address the commission at this time?
Mark Garfalo, 95 Academy Hill.
Yes, Mark.
Good evening. Regarding that trolley point, so is that going to require a public hearing?
Yes.
Yes.
Either way, it's a public hearing, whatever is being decided.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so as it relates to that, I know this is not the public hearing, but as it relates to that, it's a significant change from what was approved, and it doesn't look like the parking is, they just met the parking requirements. Now you're adding a whole bunch more, and I would just caution the board and urge the board strongly to make sure that there's enough parking on any project that you approve. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Thanks, Mark. Happy Thanksgiving to you too. Would anybody else from the public like to address the commission at this time? Anybody else from the public? Okay, with that, the public portion is closed. We'll move on to item number 7, approval of minutes. We got a whole bunch of minutes that Karen sent out today, and I sent it along to commission members for August, September, and October's meeting. Does anybody have any questions? I would move that we approve the minutes of the August meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Made and seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. As far as September's meeting, I move that we receive and approve the minutes of the September planning and zoning meeting as written. Is there a second?
Second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? And the same thing with the October minutes. I move that we accept the October minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, receipt of applications. 8A, Derby Apartment Investments LLC, Trolley Point, 90 Main Street, zone text change to convert from a center design development district zone to a PDD zone. I move that we receive that. And do we hear, now again, this is another one where we have two things. Do we receive them both into as public hearings for next month?
Yes.
And we could hear them concurrently. We could hear them together because yes, one overlaps the other. Okay. And we set it up for next month for a public hearing. Is there a second?
Second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, item number 8B, Derby Apartment Investments, LLC, Trolley Point, 90 Main Street, it's not a special exception application, for 105 unit apartment building, 39 one bedroom, 62 studio and 4 2 bedroom. We want clarification from the applicant, whether it's just a site plan development or a master site plan. For next month, I move that we receive it and set it for a public hearing for next month.
Second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Ryan's favorite subject, stat 10A, status of the tension basins, informal discussion. Ryan, I will defer to you. It was that last basin that was left.
Lansbury Court. Yes, Mr. Yes. Chairman, thank you. So at last month's meeting, we had Sarah, myself, Carmen DiCenzo, and John Marini, Corporation Counsel, on site to review the Lansbury Court Basin. And we found, in general, I'd characterize the basin as a bit of a mixed bag in terms of maintenance. On one hand, the berm and the embankment is in excellent shape. It's regularly mowed. It's regularly maintained. It doesn't have any significant vegetation other than lawn on it. For the majority of the basin itself, there's not significant vegetation within it. There is on the south side nearest to Lansbury Court, north side, a fair amount of vegetation that's begun to grow that they need to maintain and remove. There are, however, large deposits of sediment in the bottom of that basin from presumably decades of road sand and other debris that's entered in the basin that needs to be removed. That is the primary maintenance concern that I noted. We did have an overgrown situation near the outlet, but it's not terrible, so that can be removed as well. talking about vegetation. And we did check the basin against the prior approval or the approval from 1994, where the ALA control structure was significantly modified. As I stated at the last meeting, we found that it's substantially similar to what was approved. But the issue that everyone's noted, who's viewed this basin during large storm events, it doesn't seem to hold water. So what we did are two things. One is we looked at the previous design, previous calculations done in 1994, and it was done correctly at the time. The calculations were done correctly. So what is the reason behind this not holding water? And one thing that I suspect is the case is that there simply isn't enough inlet capacity in the watershed that contributes to the basin. I reviewed some of the roads that go down to it. David Humphreys Road, Durenzo Heights, just as a couple examples. There's very few catch basins, and anything that does not get entered into the storm drainage system bypasses, heads down David Humphreys Road potentially, and then gets into the culvert at Sodom Lane without being directed to the stormwater basin. So I suspect that may be playing a role in the amount of water that is theoretically supposed to get to the pond that is not today, or that may not be today, which would certainly contribute to the perception that it's not holding water. Additionally, we did run a number of different scenarios and models with that outlet structure to see how could it be modified in a manner that results in more stormwater being detained, particularly during more frequent storm events, 3, 4, 5 inch rainfall events, while not compromising the integrity of the storm, the embankment. What we don't want to do is close that outlet structure up to the point where water overtops the berm, and then that could cause a whole host of issues. So what our suggestion is at this point, and this is important to know that it's a suggestion, because the city does not have the right to require the owner to make modifications to the structure. But I believe that these modifications that we've suggested, which would involve closing up the lower opening in the basin by almost half and having some vertical elements in the orifices, will do a better job at detaining stormwater, which is the purpose of that basin. So in terms of the maintenance requirements, in terms of our suggestions to the modifications to the outlet structure, we do have to meet with the owner of the Stormwater Basin, Detention Basin LLC, which is Kathy Norwood is a member of that LLC. Any representation that she wants to have, and also the Connecticut DEEP. They did in 2006 take some review ownership or review responsibilities to this stormwater basin, in particular the embankment. So any changes to that outlet structure would also likely at least have to be reviewed with the DEEP, possibly approved by them. They may not really care, because the way we designed it, it wouldn't have any greater influence on the maximum water surface elevation in the pond. But I think certainly the maintenance items that we've suggested need to be performed. And the owners of the pond were present at our visit, and they were generally in agreement that they needed to be done, particularly removal of sediment. They will likely be asking for some help from the city to do it, with the notion that all the accumulated sediment is road sand primarily. That would be something that would have to be discussed with the mayor's office, the owner of the basin, public works, etc. But certainly more discussion with the owners are required, in particular, any modifications to that outlet structure. Although what we've suggested, I believe, will certainly make a difference, at least to show more visible and more realistic detention of stormwater in that pond. So I know there's a lot of information I submitted yesterday to the commission. I'm sure you probably didn't get to digest it very, very thoroughly, but frankly, a lot of this will have to be discussed through the mayor's office, through Public Works, and with the owner of the Stormwater Basin to see what level of public-private partnership might be applicable here, and how we move forward.
Okay, Ryan, I have a question. Were they looking for help from the city in the design and the reconfiguration of the detention basin, or were they looking for the help in the cleanup?
Cleanup. And when we did meet with them, they seemed open to the notion of modifying that structure. Really, what we've suggested can be done with brick and mortar and a wet saw. So it's not terribly complicated at the moment, pending any additional suggestions the DEEP may have. But they did seem receptive to the notion of, you know, relatively simple modifications to that structure. You know, obviously, so long as it didn't really harm the integrity of the pond in any way. So they were helpful at the site meeting at the field walk. Let's hope that cooperation continues. But this will require more discussion with the city.
All right, just a couple points to know: if they're receptive to minor modifications, but they want help into cleaning it up, which is normal maintenance of the pond, that's sending the wrong message to me anyway, you know, to this commission and to the city that, yeah, we like it. Yeah, we'll make modifications, but we also need help cleaning it up. It's their pond, which ultimately, yep. Is there any path to it becoming our pond, meaning the city's? Or will it always remain their pond if they refuse to do simple maintenance? Because it seems to me that if there's decades of buildup of silt, of road silt, that's just raising the bottom to the point where, and one of your comments in one of your letters was you couldn't see the outlet because of overgrown vegetation. So therefore nobody got in to that basin to clean it up and to clear out the vegetation just to make sure it ponds like it should, because one of the problems we have as a commission is it doesn't pond. It doesn't hold water. It doesn't perform. It's just land.
Yeah. So what I would say are the maintenance items that I've noted, I would suggest don't have a direct impact at the moment on the function of the pond as it was designed in 1994. The amount of sediment is a little troubling in some areas. The amount of vegetation in some areas is a little overgrown. But I can tell you of all the ponds we've seen in town, from a vegetation perspective, this is probably the second or third best in terms of how well it's mowed, how well it's maintained. I don't have any concern about the integrity of the berm itself. But you're right. There are maintenance items that are certainly required. But I think ultimately, you know, whether or I'm only relaying what they were hoping that the city would help, that the city might help with it. I'm not suggesting that the city will help. I'm just relaying how our conversation.
The reason why I'm asking the question is they have the amount of catch basins, where the water goes and so on. There's a certain amount of homeowners that pay into this fund every single year. Where does that money go? It's supposed to go for the maintenance of the pond first, and whatever's left, they keep. They could do what they want with. Who cares? That's not for me to decide, but all these people pay into it. You know, and you just check the land records, including myself. And I'm like, okay, I'm paying this amount of money every month, yet I have to, it's like pulling teeth and they want help to do something that they're getting paid to do. Where does that money go? Do they just divide it up at the end of the year and say, I'll wait for the city to complain to me? Those are the questions I have to ask probably the people from the detention basin. That's why I asked the question, at one point in time, is there an avenue that it becomes the city's? Because I'd rather give the city the money if they're going to do something with it than Deep Basin Inc., which I'm just paying every year, and they don't seem to do anything to it but cause us headaches as a commission. Okay, well, there are better, there are worse in town, but this one happens to stand out the most. So I'm just trying to get it to act like a pond. Yeah. You know, if water goes into it, then it should be maintained. They get the money to do it. Unlike some of the others where it's been the association has been created, but nothing has been done, i.e. Gen 80 Drive. Okay, that hasn't been done, but this one is, and like you said yourself, it looks fairly mowed, maintained. There's a, the berm seems intact. Okay, great. Now, this money that you receive from these homeowners are supposed to go for the maintenance of this detention pond. Where's the maintenance? Any maintenance? Yes,
Dave. I can chime in because
I sure, please.
Also, the original Colonel Humphrey's estate subdivision created this detention basin. And every property owner who bought a house in Colonel Humphrey's estate was required to pay, I think it was $100
a year. It's capped at $100 a year.
But the stipulation was that the owner of the detention basin had the sole responsibility to maintain that detention basin. That was exactly the purpose of the contribution of the homeowners there. Then in 1994, Cornfield Estates tied in their storm drains on the other side of David Humphrey's Road, crossed David Humphrey's Road, discharged into detention basin, and those property owners there were also required to pay into the debasining fund. So I don't understand why the city would have to.
Dave, believe me, I'm not saying that the city is going to do anything. What I'm suggesting, I'm just relaying my conversation with the owner. Okay.
And that's what I'm speaking, Ryan. I appreciate that. And that's what I'm speaking to. Your conversation, but as a person who's lived there for 32 years, I've been paying into this fund for 32 years, and I'm only one homeowner. It covers Colonel Humphrey Estates and a portion of Cornfield Estates, whether it's 10 houses, 50 houses, 500 houses. It doesn't matter. There's more input, but it seems like there's no maintenance. And that's what we're trying to get, and it's not towards you, Ryan, but we're trying to say, where's the maintenance? If you're getting all this money, where is the maintenance? And you're entitled to make money. I don't begrudge them that. If you're entitled to be the owner of a detention basin and to make money, so be it, but at least maintain it.
Well, I don't want to get off track on the question about my what I brought up earlier. Okay. That was not something that I committed to with them. I suggested was appropriate. I think we're getting a little off track with that, but I think certainly that sentiment is something that, you know, I'm sure the mayor is aware of that as well. So as we move forward, you know, let's focus on getting them to comply with what are reasonable maintenance requirements. And that's the important part.
So where Barbara, I'll ask you legally, where do we go from here? We have a situation. We're unhappy with the way it is. We have some suggestions from our own engineer that are very minimal in cost to make it better than what it is, whatever that is. And we have a cleanup. What do we have to do to get them to do that?
As we discussed last time about this, it's possible that we're going to have to go back to court.
What do we do? Let me ask it a different way. What's our next step? What's our next step? Now that we're here and we've had our engineers spend a lot of time, energy, and effort along with Sarah to find out what is good, what is bad, what are the next steps we can take? Because obviously there's a problem here. And I will tell you firsthand, because I've been paying into something that doesn't seem to be getting done. So where do we go from here? As a city of Derby and as a commission, where can we enforce what they're supposed to be doing in the first place?
Again, we probably have to go to court to seek enforcement.
Fine. Then I'm off. What do you need from us to move this forward? It doesn't become a discussion.
Right now we have to talk with them. They have not seen this memo yet.
If we don't get compliance, that would be the next step.
That's what I'm asking. What is the next step? If it's a letter from the city to ask them to come into compliance, then we should do that. If they don't comply after a certain amount of time, we should put an end date to it. Then we take what you're suggesting to us is go back to court. Okay. But again, we took the time, energy, and effort to get here. I don't want to just say, okay, and then we don't talk about it again. Where do we go from here?
Okay. As Ryan said, let's see if we can get compliance.
That's what I'm asking.
Then we request an injunction.
Okay. What do you need from us? Do we need direction to the engineers to draft a letter to the owner of Deep Basin Inc. to come in compliance after this is what we found? What do we do next?
I mean, you could handle it that way.
It's not coming from the mayor's office.
It could come from Sarah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I forgot, Sarah. We do have a CEO now. Okay. So do you need that in a form of a motion or just we can ask her to do it?
No.
Because I would like to ask our zoning enforcement officer to draft a letter based on their findings to come into compliance. And let's put an end date for a response and a date of compliance. And if they don't meet that, we take Avenue B, Barbara's Avenue, we take them back to court. We don't just let it sit there and fester. We do something about it for once.
Ted, I would add that Sarah include a copy of the original subdivision approval, which clearly states the responsibility for the detention basin, both from the one from the 80s, that's Colonel Humphrey Estate, and also the later one from Cornfield Estates around 1994, because both of those subdivisions reference the detention basin and responsibility for the maintenance of it. Okay.
Thank you, David. Yes, they do. Sarah, can you take care of that for us and report back for next month? Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Is there anything to talk about that detention basin? I figured we can take on one at a time as we move along. Are you prepared, Ryan, to discuss any of the others, or you just want to, we'll start with this and we'll move on to the next ones because there are some in worse shape, as you stated.
Yeah, I don't have any updates on any other ones, I believe.
Okay.
Sarah's been in coordination.
I have a few updates on So the one behind Town Fair Tire off of New Haven Avenue, they have been mostly compliant. They have a landscaper working on it. The berm was in terrible shape when we inspected it back in July or August, and that has mostly been cleared now, except for one corner because it's been too wet to do that. And then the whole bottom of the basin is still filled with a lot of vegetation, but they may have to go to wetlands before they can do that. We were just waiting until the berm was fully cleared. So that one is the only one that's been actually having work done on it. And then most of the other detention basins, I've sent out letters to the neighborhoods, and there's either just been arguing among the neighbors about what to do, or for example, Lilac Circle, I had one neighbor call and ask if they could give the detention basin back to the city. And that's about all that's been done.
Well, that's one of the questions I asked about this detention basin off Lanzieri Court is, what is the recourse? Is the recourse for the city to take it back and take it over? Is it for, we can force the association to do something with the basin? Does then any payments that are going to Lilac Circle go to the city for the maintenance of the basin? That's what I'm trying to get to. Do we take this basin? If we do, what do we get?
No, I don't believe there's a need to take it. There's the ability for the city to go and do the maintenance on those. And many of the more recent subdivisions had a 90-day period where the city noted there were some maintenance responsibilities or requirements. The community had 90 days to respond. if not the city has the ability to go in there and perform the work.
Okay.
I'm not sure that 90-day period is over yet.
Okay.
But I think we have about 2 weeks in the 90-day period for a couple of the neighborhoods. So
okay,
we're getting close. Why,
just to clarify, Ryan, if they don't take action and the city decides to take action, then the city is allowed to bill that entity and or the landholders.
Correct.
For the work.
Correct.
It sounds like, Sarah, you probably made that clear in your letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great job. Thanks, Sarah. Thumbs up.
is that actually on the land records?
Yes.
Or is that?
Yes, it is. It is.
For many of them, yes. Yeah. It's clearly spelled out in a.
It clearly says it for all of them except for the Lanzieri Court one.
Woodland Walk might be a little gray as well, but that one wasn't in.
So. The Lanzieri Court one is not on the land records?
No. It's just that's the only one that doesn't talk about like a 90-day period or that.
Or that the city has the right.
Yeah.
Or that the city has the right to go and perform the maintenance.
Oh, I see.
That's a big, big distinction between that basin and some of the other ones in town.
Okay, I'm clear.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay, we'll wait till next month then. Okay, item number 10B, cannabis legislature laws and formal discussion. I believe the commission was in agreement last month as to where to put and how to move forward with what we wanted to see for legislature laws. Barbara, would you or Vince like to talk to the commission at this time and see how we should move forward?
I'm happy to do that. And Ryan, if you can share your screen. Liz, unfortunately, could not be here. She had a meeting conflict. And together, we put a little tutorial here so you know what you're getting into and what the broad rules are. And at the end of the discussion, we can see how those rules impact where you may like to allow the sale of cannabis to take place. So if I can have the next slide, Ryan, second slide. I think some of this doesn't apply to you necessarily, but I think to place this in context, you need to understand the licensing procedure. The licenses, while you're involved in land use, the licenses really come from the Department of Consumer Protection, and they fall into four broad categories that you can see on the screen. One is growing, and there are two subcategories. One is a cultivator and a micro cultivator, and we'll come back to the latter one. But those are large ones and smaller ones. Then there is the production, the person who's manufacturing a product, taking from the grower and putting it into a product. Someone who is converting the product, the raw product, to food and beverages. And then there's someone who's putting a label on the product. So the grower and the producer could be one and the same, but there are separate licenses. The third category, which affects you in particular, should you go forward, is the sale to the public. And there are two categories there. One is the retailer, the person who is selling the product, and a hybrid retailer, which covers the category of one who may already be authorized for the sale of marijuana as medical marijuana. So somebody can do both, but if they're doing both, they still need an additional license. And then they get the fourth person involved, the person who's distributing it. So if you want home delivery from the retailer to you, there is a specialized license for someone who is going to give you curb service. And then there's the transporter who can take the product from the grower or the producer to the retailer. So those are all individual licenses that DCP will have their fingers in going forward. Next one. Next slide, Ryan. So these are all the definitions, and I won't go into them in great detail, but I think the two that are most applicable to our understanding of where the commission may like to go is the micro cultivator and the retailer. The micro cultivator is someone who is growing this stuff in not less than 2,000 square feet, no more than 10,000 square feet of space prior to any expansion. So If someone wanted to do this and only wanted to have 1,000 square feet, they're not allowed. You have to have a minimum of 2,000 square feet to become a grower. And you can initially apply for a license to have 10,000 square feet. Now, that and then thereafter, you're allowed to expand in 5,000 square foot increments up to 25,000 square feet. And at which point, then you would have to get converted to be a cultivator. A retailer, the definition is a little bit more obvious. It's somebody who is not the dispensary or a hybrid, but is licensed to sell a cannabis product. The rest of them really don't apply to you, and you'll see that why in a minute. Okay, next slide, Ryan. So micro cultivators. So if you had the notion of allowing the product to be grown legally in Derby, it would be appropriate for you to identify locations that are appropriate for a micro cultivator, somebody relatively small, 5,000 square foot. It's interesting that it has to be, the growing must occur in a room with walls. Now, we haven't had the full discussion, but we alerted Barbara to the question, do those walls, can they be open to the sky? Or it does, do they have to be in a building? Regardless, they have to be something that is not really open to the public view, basically, so it has grown inside. Now, in our climate here, the likelihood of someone growing it outside is more remote because of the weather conditions and being limited. Somebody's investing, they're likely to grow indoor. So it essentially becomes a manufacturing operation of a certain size. Manufacturing in Derby can occur in an industrial zone. Can occur elsewhere too, in this case, perhaps if you allow it. But the likely thought here is that a cultivator really is more appropriate in an industrial zone. Next slide, please. So there are some municipal authority questions. The city is allowed, a municipality is allowed to charge the retailer or the grower for special services that may be required. Interestingly, up in of all places, Northampton, Massachusetts, they're one a retailer is so popular on weekends they have to have a traffic cop. That's from all of the Connecticut people running across the line. But you're allowed to do that after the first 30 days of opening. You can provide reasonable. You can recover those public safety costs up to a certain amount as prescribed here in the law. But no host agreements mean is that you and Ansonia couldn't combine to have a special public safety force to do this work. It would have to be a legitimate city function. Next slide. So you can, if you want, and many communities are, prohibiting establishment of any cannabis facilities. You can establish with reasonable restrictions on hours and signage and location. And the general theory is among the planning community is the restrictions should not be greater necessarily than similar sensitive receptors is what they're called, such as liquor stores in relationship to their location for schools, churches, charities, and hospitals. So that begins to limit. And I think if you stray too far from the liquor statutes that you may have, that you already have in your codes, in your zoning code, one would argue, if I were the liquor store, why would cannabis be less restrictive than liquor? So the general approach here is that you might want to look at it in terms of how you are now regulating liquor stores in relationship to other activities such as schools, churches, and so on. How about the next slide, Ryan? So this is essentially what I'm saying, is that you can create zoning standards as if, and this is, comes from the statutes, as if for any other similar use other than a cannabis establishment. If you don't set your zoning standards, someone could come in and just do this as a business, as long as they fit similar standards as with similar uses. I would recommend that you adopt very specific regulations for how you intend and where these establishments can occur in Derby. I think that here's an important criteria. A micro cultivator, you're at the moment.
Vince, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do we need separate regulations for every single one of these things that we want to do?
No. You would set a general standard as if you were to do any other use.
Okay.
All right. Now, the one interesting thing here is, and this would apply until 2024, you're only allowed to have one retailer and one micro cultivator in your city, because it's limited to, it's based on population of 25,000. Your population is only, the latest census, about 12,300 people. And so until 2024, when this restriction seems to go away, unless the General Assembly re-ups it, you're only going to get one of each. You're not going to get a plethora of these things. However, that applies to the retailer and the micro cultivator, and it's silent on all of the other licenses. So that's another question that we raised to Barbara as to how to interpret that. But again, I think the likelihood of you're getting a very, very large operation of 15, 20,000 as a big grower is not terribly likely. Next one, Ryan, please. So where do we go? So the questions that you need to ask and discuss here are what zones are appropriate for growing the production and the sale and distribution. Do you want to treat, do you only want to separate the micro and the retailer and ignore the other stuff? And I think you'd probably be all right with that. I don't think you need to get into how the product is delivered from a manufacturer to a store. I think that begins to be a little overkill in terms of regulation, and Sarah doesn't have the time to get into that. You'd need a full-time person doing that. I think the question you also need to address is how specific do you want to be? As to proximity to those other uses, you control hours and you can control signage. Next slide, please, Ryan. So here's your Derby map. You're all familiar with that. But what we have done, and go to the next one more quickly, Ryan. So and you'll see why I skipped over that, but the Derby zoning for liquor outlets is 1500 feet from another liquor outlet, school, public park, or church. Your measurement standards on how that's done is established, and you do allow liquor operations in shopping centers that have 50,000 square feet or more, and it is a single shopping center. So that's what you now have. So think of that when you apply to the next one. Next, Ryan, next slide. So what we did here is we took parks and schools. We didn't have a convenient way for tonight's discussion to identify location of churches. So if in the blobs, those are the 1500 foot radiuses. If you act on the premise that a retail use is appropriate in a business zone, could be also in an industrial zone. And so in your mill district, you don't have any restrictions of churches and so on nearby. In your centered development districts, there's a little bit of restrictions up on the northerly side. In your business one zone up on the Ansonia line up by Division Street, a little bit gets carved out, could be up there. In the other industrial zone along Route 8, there's some possibilities of in the industrial area. But then when you go to East Derby, and you start plugging in parks and schools in relationship to your business zone, you can see on the right there out on New Haven Road, Route 34, that whole area falls within the 1500 feet measurement of a park. So you begin to see that the locations in sort of self-winnow to where they could be appropriate. Now you can go and make it more strict than that. If for example, you said, we don't want this in the downtown district, period, that's okay. But those are the decisions that, and this is the context. Go to the next, I think, which is the last slide, Ryan. Oh, and this is just gets into some finer stuff as to what we would have to address in the advertising, marketing, and window displays in terms of what can be shown and what can't be. So this is a fine-grained thing. We don't need to get in it for tonight. But I think the threshold discussions are you looking at both the micro and the retailer? Are they different locations? Do you want them to be different locations? Do you want to follow somewhat less restrictive than the liquor, more restrictive than the liquor? Do you want to exclude it from certain zones for whatever reason? And so that's the nature of the discussion where we're at now. And based on what we hear tonight, then we can craft a regulation pretty quickly. But I think that it is we needed to go through, I needed to go through this exercise so I could understand the pages of what the law says. Now, I don't know if Barbara has any more thoughts on this, but we shared this with her. And I think we're probably in sync. There are a couple of minor questions that don't need to get resolved tonight, but for us to continue our work. So that's.
No, I was just gonna comment on that issue regarding the section that has restrictions for retailers and micro cultivators, but not cultivators or hybrid retailers. And I really can't make sense of it. I understand from a colleague of mine that there's supposed to be guidance coming out from the state.
From DCP.
On this legislation. You know, so maybe we'll get, we'll be able to have a further understanding of that. It particularly doesn't make sense to me that there would be restrictions for micro cultivators, but not cultivators, which are much bigger. So I don't, you know, I'm not sure what the legislature was thinking about that. The one question I had, Vince, I totally agree with your approach. Those are the important issues that the commission needs to decide to go forward on this and get a specific proposed regulation crafted. And you know, I agree that a cultivator, it's not likely that someone like that would come into Derby, but what about the hybrid retailer?
Is there a dispensary now in Derby?
No, okay, so that, so. Oh, all right, so that would have to be only where there's already a dispensary, yes, for the medical. Okay,
unless somebody wanted to apply separately for a dispensary license in the city.
What if somebody already has the license for the medical and is located somewhere else? I've been told that there's the ability to relocate.
I don't know that. My experience with one dispensary goes back a couple of years ago, and DCP was limiting the total number of dispensaries for medical marijuana at that time. And they were treating it, and this is in the case of Southington, and Southington treated it as a general business use, as if it were a pharmacy. And wherever a pharmacy could be, they said that would be acceptable. So in the case of Southington, they allowed that location. But at the time, DCP was only issuing so many licenses geographically to spread them out. Whether or not those same rules will apply here remains to be seen. DCP has not, by the way, as far as I know, while this is the enabling statute, the administration, the regulation that accompany statutes isn't there yet, I don't think.
Right. So again, hopefully that's going to give us more guidance as right. we move forward.
Right. Right. But I think the big questions here are looking at this map, looking at how you now restrict liquor, what are the appropriate geographies? Do you want to, and do you want to separate those geographies between the production, micro production, and perhaps even be more flexible on the location micro production, because you're not, they're not necessarily selling it to the public. So the I hate to, you know, the sensitivity of liquor and in proximity to churches and schools and parks came about because we don't want children becoming close to such violent stuff, you know? So in this particular case, if you treat it the same way, I think that's okay. But you might want to treat micro a little differently. If it's micro exclusively. So we're open to thoughts because we need the guidance here. My recommendation is that it shouldn't be wide open. I think you really need to tailor it to appropriate locations in the town within the framework that we just established.
I could jump in. I got a couple opinions on everything we just talked about. As far as the microcultivator, I don't think you should restrict that really at all within acceptable business districts, such as like B1 zones, whatever. I think what Vin said is pretty accurate. If you have let's say an 8,000 square foot building somewhere and all they do is grow weed inside, I don't think it really affects a church, a school, what have you, as long as it's not being distributed out of the same building. And then as far as the retail, I don't know how the commission feels about the retail being in like our downtown district, but I will say that if you do adopt the same law or the same regulation as the liquor, the amount of churches in downtown is going to take out most of it anyway. Any place that you're going to have a spot to open it in a downtown district is going to be down towards the river where there's currently a whole lot of nothing. And then also the Mill Design District is basically the two spots you're going to pigeonhole that and a small part of Division Street, which I think is also a reasonable area to have a small, like a retail location for that. I guess that's my two.
Let me, Dan, let me qualify when you said the micro anywhere in a B zone. Would you also allow the micro grower to be in one of your industrial zones?
By B zone, I mean any non-residential,
okay,
not hospital campus, not, you know what I mean? Any place that that business would commonly be allowed to be conducted.
Okay. I think that's reasonable, by the way. But again, for clarity.
No P, no HC, no residential zones. I tend to agree with Dan on that. Mill Design just perfect. There's a whole lot of nothing in the MDD
part of the
zone.
Big limiting factor or anti-limiting, however you want to look at it, is going to be the square footage requirement. You're going to have an industrial space. You're going to have three-phase power. You're going to have adequate electricity to have a grow facility based on the air conditioning needs and the lighting needs, stuff like that. It's not applicable. It's not feasible to have it in a residential neighborhood, put it that way. It's something that you're going to need more or less industrial or commercial infrastructure to handle anyway. I think that and the square footage requirement is going to kind of push you towards what we would consider a reasonable location anyhow for a grow operation.
Hey, let's keep in mind something, folks. We're only allowed one of each. That's correct. It. One retailer and one micro grower. So I think we had some informal discussions before, and we're pretty much all in agreement that we would like to get the best of each. If we're only allowed one, let's get the best and maybe the biggest too. That's why I'm kind of leaning towards the B1 zone, because that's where we have our shopping centers. Those shopping centers are greater than 50,000 square feet, so we don't have that liquor restriction that we do in other zones, other locations. And we have a lot of vacant space, a lot of big vacant space in our shopping centers. Some of that vacant space has been vacant for over 10 years. They're looking for some kind of a use that, you know, heretofore hasn't appeared before them.
So Ryan, excuse me, Dave, I want you to continue there if you don't mind, but can you bring up the zoning map, Ryan?
Yes.
Because Dave, let's talk about that B1 zone that you just talked about, that you mentioned. Let's examine those zones.
Again, Vince, what Dave, I think, is saying is more for the cultivator, the micro-cultivator side of things. Not necessarily having a giant, you know, retail.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody's going to have a giant retail.
Okay. Dan, thank you. Yeah, I didn't catch that distinction, Dave.
Well, I mean, if we have a giant retailer, we'll be the biggest one in the state of Connecticut, I can tell you that.
But to Dave's point, as well as mine, is that I don't think that should be restricted. If you're only cultivating in that location. However, I guess against Dave's point is, I don't think Adams should get turned into a grow facility because it's a fairly public place. And it's just going to, now it's going to be a giant factory smack dab in the middle of a shopping center. And it's not going to be open to the public.
But we got to take into consideration, we don't know what the restrictions that Big Y has put on the on them taking over and signing into lease. What's in their lease? Do they welcome these things with open arms or do not? Just because the city of Derby wants something somewhere doesn't mean it's going to go there. Right, because there may be restrictions that these people have in their lease that says, I'd rather not be associated with this. That's not my MO. And then it all bets are off.
Ryan, go to the other map with the circles. I think that's more appropriate. So
let me throw something out to you. Where would a place like On Time Screen Printing fall? And I know you're not supposed to zone for businesses are there, but I'm using it as a for example. Say somebody wanted to buy that property, they have retail space up above and they have manufacturing below. I don't know if that would fit. I don't know how the commission feels about that.
So that goes, that's in a business zone, right?
B2.
Right, yes.
B2 zone.
B2.
Right down here.
So it seems to me that that's an appropriate thing, right?
Okay.
Appropriate use.
I'm just throwing these possible locations in town out there because they look like they're good uses for either or both.
Yep.
I think you may want to keep in mind that some of these zones, like B2, for example, I think there's probably some properties that are appropriate and perhaps some that aren't so appropriate in terms of their size, available parking. Particularly as you go towards, if you follow my cursor here, towards, and now of course we're starting to get in close proximity to churches and things of that nature, but perhaps on New Haven Avenue, you have a lot of smaller properties, thinking along the lines of Marie Antoinette's perhaps. The barbecue joint, and then heading north, I think there's the, I forget if it's the Polish War Veterans Club. I forget what the current name of the restaurant is right at the 34 Bridge. But you know those B2 properties, you know, aren't necessarily what you have down on Commerce Drive, what you have perhaps over on Derby Milford Road, right? Krausers.
That's another example I was going to bring up, the area next to Krausers. You know, there's a lot of space. It seems like a good location that wouldn't be prohibited by the size of the building that might go there or by what's surrounding it.
So what I'm hearing is that the other site development restrictions for the particular use, and I think I would categorize exclusive micro, as an industrial use and would apply parking standards that you have in other industrial areas, right? I think. I'm talking out loud. a retail use would have to meet the all other site development standards that you have. I don't think you should be doing carve-outs. So a retailer, if you require four spaces per 1,000 square feet, then they would have to have, you know, that number of spaces on the site. So that's going to limit some of the smaller properties that may fall in these zones.
Well, what makes me a little nervous about it, though, too, Vince, is that you may have some existing retail operations at those properties where it could be considered a continuation.
Yes, you can.
That clearly have inadequate parking today. And if you get a marijuana retailer, I think at least initially, you have a serious parking problem.
Well, I would argue, Ryan, on that point, that the intensification of one retail use to another allows the commission to impose more stringent parking standards. They just don't get grandfathered because retail is retail is retail.
Right. I'll concede that, but I the regulations do allow for, you know, unless there's a different parking standard.
Yeah.
For a you know, that the ZEO has the authority to approve a change in use.
Yeah.
Now another question actually that brings up another good point. Do we want these to be special exception uses? I think that's probably appropriate, right?
That's up to the commission, but let me alert you. You want to, I think you're right that it should be a special exception. However, do you require special exceptions for liquor stores?
No.
Then I think you're on thinner ice. Again, we shouldn't be making, in tongue in cheek, I was going to say, if you start doing special exceptions, do you want to be on all night hearings? Because I can guarantee you, based on my experience in Southington, the moment somebody comes in here, that one person, it's going to be an endless hearing. However, I think this where you know, you're going into new territory. You're going into new zoning territory in the state of Connecticut with these things. So that really is up to you.
Let me throw this monkey wrench into the mix for you guys. Specifically with respect to, again, micro cultivators, because I think it actually could make sense. What about the newly formed SDD provision? Would you exclude that from any of this, or would you include it?
You know, Dan, I was thinking about that, not in necessarily with the SDD, but with the with your PDDs. Do you want these to come in into any of your PDDs or into your center design development district? But I think that's an issue that you need to discuss or need to, you know, should you only allow it as an SDD? But again, that becomes more restrictive or could become more restrictive than a liquor store in a retail setting. So I think if someone, okay, the SDD, it can be done in any non-residential zone, right?
And the carve-outs.
So you could do it one of two ways. One of saying, no, it is not, you would amend SDD to prohibit this use, or you could allow it and be open to that as a suggestion.
For example, like, isn't there a property over on like 10th or West 9th or something like that that's technically in a residential area, but it's a commercial building? That would be qualify for the SDD and potentially be a decent spot for someone to start a grow operation, probably access the commercial power infrastructure, all that kind of stuff. I'm thinking you got my gears turning when you started mentioning some.
I think the grow operations, I think you have really emphasized that, and I think that's good because they are distinct from the retail operations, and you can be more flexible. And if that were appropriate through an SDG, because of whatever, that would be all right. I think that's not a bad way of going. Other thoughts, folks, about where you don't want it?
Can I just chime in, Chair?
Sure, go ahead.
I definitely like the idea of the inclusion of the B2 and maybe with frontage on New Haven Avenue and maybe east of Commerce, you know, to try to avoid some of that area downtown as you get closer to St. Michael's Church and things like that. And that's for the retail component. I also tend to agree with Dan that the innocuousness of a micro cultivator, you know, I essentially look at it as a greenhouse, and those folks don't want to be seen. They don't want you to even know they're in there. Whether it's indoors or, to your point, Vince, four walls with no roof, those, they don't want you to know they're even there. So they're not going to be advertising. It's really just a place for people to work and grow and then ship things out of there. So I tend to agree with Dan that I think there does have to be a delineation between the retail component and the micro cultivator component in terms of where we want to allow it. But I definitely like the portions of the B2 and the MDD for the retail part. So thank you.
Thanks, Drew.
Ryan? As far as the that map, I mean, how difficult would it be to start dropping in the churches and seeing what they eliminate? Because like to piggyback on what Dan was saying, churches downtown will probably eliminate downtown, you know, de facto. But is there anything that the number of churches in town would that do, and that maybe make it a little bit easier because it pigeonholes us even more?
Raul, we can do it. We didn't do it because we had this other stuff off GIS a lot more easily for this discussion. But yes, we can pick off those uses.
We can pick them off, but I think you know, the part of the logic, Raul, and Vince will probably correct me on this, I'm sure, but is that we're trying to demonstrate how the liquor elements, if applied to retail for cannabis, would apply. You're not necessarily compelled to hold those same standards, but I think we were trying to use it as an example of a similar restricted.
I think it's a great jumping off point.
Yeah, for the next discussion that we have here, we'll put that map together for you.
Perfect.
All right, so I think we're getting some pretty good directions. The intention is, Ted, I know you guys want to move fairly quickly. You want to be sort of, you know, a leader in this new industry. Why don't we try to draft something up and circulate it to you in advance of your next meeting, so you guys can, you guys and ladies, sorry, will have an opportunity to review it and come up with some good comments, and then we can go from there. Process wise, this is going to be an amendment to the regulations, and based on what I'm hearing tonight, it's going to require a referral to the respective councils of government, because it will affect properties, or could affect properties within 500 feet of your municipal boundaries. Sure. That shouldn't hold you up, but we can put something together and circulate it in the next couple of weeks in advance of your meeting.
I think, Vince, you hit the nail on the head. It's more important that this commission has really kind of crafted where they would really like it. We just want to make sure we do it properly.
Yep.
And we cover all bases, because you brought things up tonight that I don't understand how they regulate it and what the different levels are. Certain things we don't have to worry about, certain things we do. I think the micro cultivator and the retailer, I think hitting on those two, and we're allowed one of each, goes back to let's get the best of what we have, of what is out there now, if we are the leaders and what we want to craft as regulations for it to allow it. And I think you got enough feedback from all commission members and knowing how you want to move forward now for next month. And all anything we can get circulated in the meantime, we can for next month. We don't have to wait until next month.
Yeah. No, I would like to circulate sooner. And Ryan, I'll talk with Liz in the morning, and maybe we can circulate to Raul's question about the churches. We can drop that in so the commission can see that in advance and at least noodle it through in your own minds.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your efforts.
Thank Liz. She's the,
thank you.
Liz was the brain.
She's not here.
I know. You can still.
Brain Trust is not here. You get all the credit, right, and you leave her home or to at another meeting.
She's up. She's doing the POCD up in Southbury tonight.
Well, thank her for us,
please. I will. Thanks, guys. Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too, Vince. Have a good one. Okay, we'll move on to item number 10C, Home Depot, 117 Main Street. Update on previous approved site plan application to remove and replace trees along Main Street. I think we discussed it at last month's meeting, and we realized that, you know, although a lot of things were done, there were certain things that were missing or that they put in place. And Sarah, have you had any conversations with the folks at Home Depot?
Yeah, so I think it was last week, Brian and I had a phone conversation with two people from NELTS, which was the company that Home Depot was using to do the plantings. And basically they said that the trees were the way that they were because of supplier issues. And so we discussed them replacing it, and they said that nothing can be done until the spring because of the climate, and that trees planted now would likely die. And when we asked about what sort of supply they would have in the spring that could be replaced so the trees could meet the standard the commission was looking for of the taller height or width of diameter of the trees, they told us that they could not give us an answer till at least February of 2022.
Okay.
They did express a willingness to make this right.
Yeah.
I don't think Home Depot is happy either.
Yeah. As long as if they expressed a willingness to undo the wrong, yes, that's good. That's absolutely great to hear. If it requires another couple months, we keep it on the agenda. We keep talking about it for the next couple months until we can get them either back here or to agree for the next planting season what to do to put it back the way it should be. Based on the approved site plan. It just irks me that they just decided that they had a supply problem and they would change things and not meet the site plan and not tell us, which is kind of troublesome. You know, they said, well, we can't get 10-foot, 3-inch diameter trees. We can only get 2-inch, 6-foot trees. So we'll plant those instead. Nobody thought to come before us and say, hey guys, we got a problem. We can only get this. Do you want to wait till next growing season and see what happens? Or do you want us to plant this now? Nobody came before us. That's pretty much it. And we've already demonstrated that we'd be willing to work with anybody. Just refer to our detention basins. So for them to not plant what we asked them to do is beyond me. And believe me, I understand supply and demand and the issues we're all having. Okay. Anything from the commission members? Any comments? I would just keep this open, keep it on the agenda month to month to month until we get to the February, March timeframe and we can discuss it with Home Depot if they're willing to work with us. I mean, does anybody from the commission have any other comments? Okay, we'll keep it on the agenda. Motion to pay bills if deemed correct. Is there a second?
Second.
Made and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion to adjourn? I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
I appreciate it. Take care. Have a good one.